Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 19th day of June. Juneteenth, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Okay, that's that's not right.
That's not right. A researcher has uncovered one of the more unusual finds in the annals of malware. Booby-trapped files that rat out downloaders and tried to prevent unauthorized downloading in the future. The files are available on sites frequented by software pirates. Vigilante, as Sophos Labs principal researcher Andrew Brandt is calling the malware, gets installed when victims download and execute what they think is pirated software or games. Behind the scenes, the malware reports the file name that was executed to an attacker-controlled server, along with the IP addresses of the victim and of the victim's computer. As a finishing touch, Vigilante tries to modify the victim's computer so they can no longer access the piratebay.com and as many as 1,000 other pirate sites. It's really unusual to see something like this because that's normally just one motive behind most malware, stealing stuff. Whether that's passwords or keystrokes or cookies or intellectual property or access or even CPU cycles to mine cryptocurrency, theft is the motive. But not in this case. These samples really only did a few things, none of which fit the typical motive for malware criminals. Vigilante goes on to update a file on the infected computer that prevents it from connecting to the Pirate Bay and other internet destinations known to be used by people trading pirated software. Specifically, the malware updates hosts, a file that pairs one or more domain names to distinct IP addresses. The malware pairs the piratebay.com to 127.0.0.1. There's no place like home. A special purpose IP address, often called the local host or loopback address, that computers use to identify their real IP address to other systems. By mapping the domains to the local host, the malware ensures that the computer can no longer access those sites. The only way to reverse the blocking is to edit the host file to remove the entries. Brandt found some of the Trojans lurking in software packages available on a Discord-hosted chat service. He found others masquerading as popular games, productivity tools, and security products available through BitTorrent. There are other oddities. Many of the Trojanized executables are digitally signed using a fake code signing tool. When viewed through a hex editor, the executables also contain a racial epithet that's repeated more than 1,000 times, followed by a large, randomly sized, just at the point where you're feeling good about this guy, followed by a large randomly sized block of alphabetical characters. Padding out the archive with purposeless files of random length may simply be done to modify the archive's hash value, Brandt wrote. Padding it with racial slurs told me all I needed to know about its creator. Vigilante has no persistence method, meaning it has no way to remain installed. That means people who have been infected need only to edit their host's file to be disinfected. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Vigilante Malware. And your choices are great idea, slippery slope, horrible idea, no idea, and other. So far we have 21 votes and no idea is just beating out horrible idea. If you said other, and we would love you to vote at the poll, that's at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Up on the upper left is a link to the poll. Just click on that and you can vote in the poll. And if you said other, or if you just have more to say about this, then after you voted, scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see, the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussions is 19 June 21, Vigilante Malware. So far, we've got a couple of a couple of things in there, just one by me, and it's coming up now. One by me and one by MyCQ. And it's an interesting idea. There have been a number of companies who have floated the idea of doing this over the years, putting a fake program up on the web for people to download that would then do something to their machine.
Mm-hmm. Take it over.
And especially pirate sites is where you often get malware and viruses because they claim to be the hot thing people want to pirate.
Right. They have been advised repeatedly by their lawyers that damaging someone else's computer or even changing it anyway is illegal.
Yep.
And you're subject to fines.
Right. What they often will put in their program, they will upload their own program to pirate sites, but they will put in it a little piece of code that just sends out the IP address. And there is nothing illegal about that. So what happens is they get your IP address and they can come and get you if they wanted to. They did that at RIT over and over and over. We had so many students who were stealing software from places like the Pirate Bay and equivalent places. And many companies, I mean, I couldn't number them anymore.
Remember back in the day, BearShare and all that?
All of that stuff, yeah. LimeWire and all those things, yeah. But many, many companies put that little bit of code, that little bit of extra code, in their fake
program.
Well, and they're real. I mean,
it's a legit program, yeah.
They would then call us up and say, so we see one of your students is stealing things from us. I've told you this before. I got a call one time from one of the studios that said, we understand you've stolen one of our movies. I said, pretty unlikely, but what movie was it? And they said it was The Waterboy with Adam Sandler. I said, well, honest, if I were going to steal a movie, it would not be Sandler movie under any circumstances. But they came and talked to me, and what it turned out was I owned in record, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the laptops and
you're a person of record.
I'm a person of record. So what happened was we had loaned a student a laptop to do a project for one of the faculty, and this kid downloaded this movie. So what they did was, and we caught him because we have software that updates and inventories all our laptops, and we inventoried all the laptops and found that this one had the movie on it. So we knew it was this kid. So they brought him in, and they said, we're writing you up, and it goes in your record. And if you get no other convictions, he was a freshman, if you get no other convictions for 4 years, we'll tear it up. Otherwise, it goes in with your transcript. Anytime some company says we need his transcript, they get a letter saying he's a thief. Not the best thing.
You mean his permanent record?
His permanent record.
Yeah. I didn't know they really existed.
Yeah. The grammar school permanent record's not a big deal. The college permanent record?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you want to be very careful about that stuff. And, of course, so many, as Steve said, so many bad actors are putting fake games, fake songs. I can't tell you how many times people have said to me, I downloaded this song and it didn't work. Oh, it did exactly what it was supposed to do. You have a virus now.
Well, I got into a discussion with a couple of folks. They were talking about, you know, how both that meat company and the gas line were overtaken in that, and they paid out the Bitcoin. And people are getting, these other folks are getting malicious emails by this unknown address. I go, no, it's just a matter of time before they find out who they are. Well, it says anonymous. I go, wait a minute.
Nothing's anonymous.
You don't understand. just like you live in a house, you might not publish your address, but, you know, you have a house, you have a house number. Just like the internet, you have an IP address. So you can sign up for any email address or do anything you want under any name or whatever, thinking you're being secret. No, they can find you out by your IP address. And it's just a matter of time of pecking down, and they can locate you. So if you think you're hiding and being shrewd, no. Guaranteed, folks. I have seen some of the tools and that even here in Rochester, what they can do to sniff out addresses and email addresses of some. Well, I created this one, so does it have my name to it? Yeah, it does, because your email account, your internet account has your name on it. So you can create whatever names you want. It's still going to tie back to you.
We should get to the phones, but I had a guy who was saying, you know, I have my servers out on the internet, and he said, well, you know, you could put a thing there so you could relay through, you know, the external machine. Nobody can get your address. Well, they'll get the address of the server that I'm using. And then all they have to do is look up the public record of who owns that server, and we're on our way. All right, to the phones. Our first caller, hopefully still patiently waiting on the line, is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, guys. Well, you were worth waiting for.
Sorry, I didn't hear that, Mike.
I said you're well worth waiting for.
Thank you. What a very nice thing to say. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. So on a older Dell laptop, Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to do a Zoom thing, and it says I don't have a microphone.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if that's a software or hardware issue, if I might have deleted something by accident, or if it's just no physical microphone. When I go to settings and sound, it says no input. Devices found.
Now, is this a laptop or a desktop?
Laptop.
Okay.
Depends on how older is, but some older laptops did not, in fact, have microphones. Some didn't even have cameras.
Yeah.
Oh, this has a camera.
Okay, but it may not have a microphone. The first thing to do is to look at the specs for that particular model.
Okay.
And see if it, in fact, comes with a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
If it does, then you probably need a driver, which is no longer available for Windows 10. So you have two choices. One is find the driver, good luck, or just buy a little external USB microphone.
I'd
check your hardware manager to see if it sees the microphone and if Windows 10 can find a driver for it.
Right. Well, it said no input devices.
Well, the other thing, too.
Because the hardware manager may not have published it to the...
He can get a lot of the cameras now come with built-in microphones. So you can get a camera, and which has better picture quality.
It'd be a better quality camera than what's in the computer.
And you're going to have a built-in microphone. And they're, you know, I mean, you can pick them up for dirt cheap now.
Okay.
See, I don't know if it's visible on stream or not, but I have a 1080 camera. No, I have a 720 camera. Nick has a 1080 camera, and Dave has a 2K camera. Because that's the newest one.
Oh, flipping up.
Well, he's farther away, so I figured it might help. Actually, I should probably change him because he's farther away.
No, his bald spot.
Yeah, right.
It's not too much, a bald spot.
You know what it is. Say it.
No, it'd be too much for the crowd to handle. We don't want to get the folks that excited.
Right. But first, Steve is right. First, check your hardware manager and see if you get the little triangle with the exclamation point.
Is hardware manager, is that the same as the device manager?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Check your device manager to see
if one's even listed.
Right. If it is, then you need to find, you're still in the same place. At that point, you either need to find the proper driver.
Yeah. If it's
because
still out
clearly
there.
Clearly Windows 10 didn't recognize it.
Yeah. There's nothing under audio inputs and outputs.
Yeah, see, you might just be better off, like we suggested, just go ahead and buy yourself a little camera that will hang off the back part of the laptop screen. Uh-huh. And it comes with a better camera and built-in sound.
Okay.
Now, hold on a second, though. You also said it didn't have any audio output?
Yeah, I've got the audio output. The speakers work okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But no input.
Right.
Yeah. So either, right, so it's either there is no microphone or the microphone is so old that it's simply not recognized.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll check those out. Thank you so much.
Sure. Yeah, I got an external USB mic that really has very nice sound, but now I do it all with my headphones that I have at home with a nice lavalier.
Yes, your name, please.
Is that lavalier?
Nick,
no,
where are you calling from?
Whatever. Mike.
It's amazing how much a good mic can make things sound so much better.
Yeah. And having the mic right here means it's directional and you know.
A lot of people use the mics they have for their like phone cord, and so the mic is sort of dangling down here somewhere, and it just doesn't sound as good.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Nick from Rochester. Hi, Nick. What's up?
Hi. Hi, guys. It's Rick from Pittsburgh.
Oh, Rick.
Okay. his phone kept cut.
We're close. I'm trying to take your recommendation and get away from the evil Microsoft Office and Windows. I put LibreOffice on a Chromebook.
Yeah.
And it seems to work okay, except the Chromebook or the LibreOffice can't recognize my printer. Everything is just generic printer. So the only thing I can do is print through a PDF, which really is not going to work. Also, it won't read the USB port directly. I can include it, but if I want to make this thing a real, you know, get away from Microsoft thing, I just can't seem to get those things to work. Can you offer any suggestions?
So you're on a Chromebook, and it doesn't recognize the printer, and it doesn't recognize the USB ports.
The Chromebook does. LibreOffice. When I'm in LibreOffice, it doesn't.
Okay. Huh. What an interesting thought.
All I get is generic printer, and it won't. I've seen the tutorials, and it's supposed to come up, but it just does not seem to recognize it.
Right. Interesting. This is an interesting problem.
Shouldn't LibreOffice just see the system printer?
You would think. Does the system printer work?
I can print to a PDF file through LibreOffice and then print that PDF. But you know, I've got LibreOffice on Windows machines, and I don't have that kind of a problem. It's not recognizing it. It's also not recognizing trying to save to a USB port. All I get is the computer.
Is there permissions you have to give it?
No, what he has to do is, because it's running in the Linux subsystem, what used to be called Crostini, you have to set up CUPS printing in order to properly get...
So Linux doesn't see the printer, but Chrome OS does.
Chrome OS does, yeah. But Linux is a subset, and it needs its own. It needs CUPS, the common
Unix printing system.
Yeah. And in fact, you can do that. There are all you really need to do is look up CUPS, install CUPS on Chromebook.
Install CUPS on CUPPS.
CUPS.
Okay.
Common Unix Printing Subsystem.
Great.
That should solve that part of the problem as to not finding the USBs. Is it Linux that's not seeing the USBs, or again just LibreOffice?
That I don't know. It's LibreOffice. I don't go down into Linux. All I get is when I try to get to, you know, look at the files, it says computer, and then I get a bunch of just, you know, like three to four little files on it, three to four, three or four little letter files, about 12 of them. And it doesn't show the, like, other locations or anything. It just doesn't seem to think the USB is there.
Okay. When was the last time you updated your system?
12 minutes ago.
Yeah, me too. Okay. Because the latest version is supposed to provide proper USB support for Linux applications.
Yeah.
So you updated and rebooted, and it still doesn't work.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. I don't have an answer for that right off the top of my head, I'm afraid.
Okay. I'll try next week.
Yeah, I'll look into it, but I can't promise, but I'll certainly look into it.
All right, well, I'll do the other of the cups, and hopefully that'll work. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Interesting. I mean, I do a bunch of, Linux stuff on my Chromebook, but that I have not done, mainly because I use the Google Workspace now, I guess they're calling it this week. Google Workspaces.
Workspace.
Singular, I think.
Singular, yeah.
I think. And it's a word processor and a spreadsheet and
it's everything in
slides and all of that. So I've been using that rather than LibreOffice, and it works just fine. Like I said, I've written four or five books on that.
It's the only thing I've used for quite a few years now.
Yeah. So I like pretty much everything it does. What we didn't talk about so far today is the Wegmans breach. Wegmans had a little bit of a breach this week. It's
a
not
little
one
bit?
Of the news stories.
How do you have a little bit of a breach?
Yeah. They apparently had two misconfigured databases. And somebody should at the very least have their wrist slapped, if not fired for that. They had apparently two misconfigured databases that let the bad guys get in and get all kinds of information.
Could have been somebody doing it on purpose.
Well, of course, they're a target. Of course they are. Oh, you mean from internally? Yeah, unlikely. Unlikely.
Never say
but,
never.
That's unlikely. But anyway, the point is, if you have a Wegmans Shoppers Club card, or you've ever shopped at Wegmans, or you've ever walked past the Wegmans, it's time to change your passwords. And we'll let you do that while we take a quick break, just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have William from Hampton, Virginia on the line. How are things down in Hampton, William?
Way too hot, Nick. How are you, Dave?
Good, sir. Yourself?
Way too hot.
Yeah. Muggy, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, the humidity.
Yeah, we're getting there in terms of the humidity. We're not quite there yet, but we are getting there.
Yeah. So what's up?
Well, it seems I have a similar quandary to your previous caller. I have a Ubuntu, and I am working with an off-brand donated printer that a neighbor gave me, a Lexmark 2670. My issue is I've been having difficulty trying to get cups to work. I've actually downloaded it and everything, but I have the window open and I'm looking at apparently the cups, and also it's displaying a Lexmark but 2600. I guess because I downloaded the wrong driver, because apparently there is no driver for the 2670.
Right. The best you can do is the family, the 2600 family. Are you saying you're in Chromebook as well?
No. I have a regular laptop, not Chromebook.
Okay. Yeah, the best you can do is to get close. The problem with so much of that stuff is when you get one of the less standard printers, you may get the family but not the exact model. So the Lexmark 2600 family should give you easy 90% of what it is that you would want that printer to do.
Yeah, don't be surprised if it hiccups once in a while if it's printing some type of character that it doesn't really recognize that it might, you know, hiccup. And
some of them, it doesn't do double siding, or it doesn't do the second tray, or, you know, that those are the kinds of things that it won't do.
Right. I did a test print and it prints, but when I try to print from the laptop, it's not doing anything.
Is it saying that it's offline? Does it recognize it as the primary printer?
I've selected it as a printer by default. Let me just move some stuff around here. Yeah, I've selected it by default. I plug it in, of course.
Okay, Lexmark has a document that will tell you how to manually add a printer in cups on Linux.
Okay, I guess I need to go to that website then.
Yeah, so what I did was I searched for Lexmark 2670 under cups. And the second choice down was from the Lexmark Support Center.
Okay,
how
so
to manually
so
add
the Lexmark website?
Yeah. And it says Lexmark United States, how to manually add printer in cups.
I found it. I'll get it posted.
Steve's going to get it posted. I would tell you the URL, but it's about 7,000 characters long.
Of course. You're going to post it on townbox.org?
Yes, we are.
Okay, great. I can just look there then.
You yep. got it.
Give it about a minute or two.
There's also a compatibility list on that page, too. So wouldn't it be great if your printer was not compatible?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm using, like the other gentleman, I'm using LibreOffice, too. But I'm using it on my Toshiba satellite, not a Chromebook.
Right. Yeah, the 7600 series seems to only list one that's absolutely compatible, but 7675.
With the ones that aren't compatible, it seems like what they do is generic text only. And so
right.
You can't get, like, different typefaces, I would imagine.
Yeah, maybe.
Or graphics or anything like that.
Maybe. Maybe, but give it a try. See what happens.
Yeah. Okay, then. Yeah, sounds good. All right, fellas.
All right, thanks. Yeah, list the X2670, but not the 75, so it's very possible that it was just...
Something by your name?
Close, but no cigar.
Yeah.
Pardon?
It's...
James?
That's one of the issues in general. A lot of printers that did not sell well or were specialized for Windows. For years, many systems had no driver of their own. They used a Windows generic
driver. Yeah, the universal driver built into Windows.
Right, and...
Didn't always work right.
Well, and exactly. But also, because of that, they did not have a standard driver of their own.
Yep.
And that translates to other...
Well, they got lazy.
Well, exactly.
Well, I won't say they got lazy. They got too confident. Oh, well, Windows will handle that. They might up front, and then, like, anything else with Windows, they abandon it.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James. From Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hello. I have a new Dell laptop, G7. And what do you recommend is the best free ad blockers and pop-up blockers because there's nothing on here right now for that, and I'm getting many ads on the Google Chrome, Twitter, and everything. So what do you recommend good to start with? I think on my old one, I had uBlock Origin or something.
That's my favorite.
That works well on what?
Yes.
Everything.
It works very well. That does all the blocking that you need, generally speaking.
The uBlock Origin?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best one.
Yeah.
And that will work for the Twitter and the Google Chrome and the, you know, all the internet surfing?
Yeah, it pretty much works for everything.
So,
The danger is that many websites won't work with an ad blocker on because they're only free because they show ads.
Okay, and what do you do in that case? You have to click for that site?
There's usually a whitelist to allow that site to show the ads, or you pay the subscription service for that site.
Oh, just for that site?
Right, it's on a site-by-site basis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the ironies is that there's some big sites that won't let you in with an ad blocker, and then as soon as you turn your ad blocker off, you get infected with the malware that they have in an ad on their page.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So basically, the one uBlock Origin is all I need. I don't need anything extra.
Well, after the fact, something like Malwarebytes is good to catch anything that might
Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep, good luck.
Okay.
Yeah, generally speaking, ad blockers, and again, you know, I'm quite the hypocrite. I have them on my
side. Well, it's a double-edged sword. Yeah. I mean,
I don't make any money off them, so I guess it doesn't matter. Well, because I've told everybody to use ad blockers. But you do have, so many of them are so stinking annoying.
All of them, even on the YouTube videos. Like, I watch a number of YouTube videos, a number of hams put out YouTube videos weekly. And constantly, you know, they do a talk on something, and it's just peppered with all these stupid ad 15-second ads that they keep putting in there. It's like, no, the minute it hits the ad, gone. Yep. Sorry.
The irony is when you want to watch like a new movie trailer or something, which is an ad for the movie, you have to watch an ad so you can watch the ad.
Right.
Well, I just saw one for Avatar 2.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, a new trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised that didn't have ads in it.
Now, I told you about SponsorBlock, right?
Yeah,
it works. SponsorBlock is a browser extension.
It's just a matter of getting time and getting around to doing it. And it's there on my list of things to do. And it's just like I was also going to put...
takes a minute.
I know. But some days...
You know, well, when you're annoyed at watching ads...
Well, that's why
you take that 1 minute and install it.
I just turn around, turn that computer off, go upstairs to the ham room, go in there, and no ads.
Yeah, I really do like SponsorBlock. It seems to, but now it is crowdsourced. I've mentioned this before.
Mm-hmm.
So the first person
folks.
I will. The first person to see a YouTube video will see the ads, but what they can do is say the ad starts here and the ad ends there. And then when enough people do that, SponsorBlock starts blocking the ad. Now, I normally don't do YouTube until the last thing of the day. So by then...
somebody's crowdsourced it.
Some, you know, 1,000, you know, people have crowdsourced it. So it always works for me. But, yeah, so... If you're tired of them, you can use SponsorBlock, and it seems that an awful lot of people do, over 1 million people. It's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good deal. All right, I have some bad news. If you're standing,
sit down.
If you're driving,
Pull over.
Apparently, some users
are,
watch your heart, are encountering serious problems after applying Windows 10's June 21 cumulative update.
Only some?
Yeah, that's the shocking part. According to various reports, mandatory... Unbelievable, isn't it? Mandatory security update KB5003637 could break the taskbar icons. In some cases, users are also unable to access the Action Center due to overlapped icons. Earlier this month, Microsoft published June 2021 security patch for Windows 10, version 21H1, version 20H2, and version 2004. KB5003637 is a security and mandatory update intended to patch the security bugs reported in the operating system and issues caused by the previous update, including the long-running memory leak bug, which they've said they've been fixing in every update for this year. Based on the various posts we've seen across social media sites, Windows 10's taskbar bug appears to be a growing issue, particularly affecting devices where the news and interest feed has been turned off using group policy or taskbar context menu. In an update to the support document, Microsoft has finally acknowledged the reports, stating that the blurry taskbar bug affects certain display configurations only, like, you know, when the system's on. No specifics were provided, and it's unclear how many users are affected worldwide. There are a bunch of fiddly fixes that purport to solve the issue. The only one that seems to work consistently is actually uninstalling the update, but that leaves you vulnerable to all the security issues the update was supposed to fix.
Yeah, but isn't that kind of a double-edged sword? If it's not actually fixing them, uninstalling that fix...
Well, it doesn't fix that one little thing, but it does patch all the security holes.
Yes,
that is working. They know they've searched it. They've done it.
But this is Microsoft.
No, but independent researchers have done this.
If they said it was raining, I'd go to the window and check.
I'd stick my head out the window and my arm.
Yeah.
Anyway, is it time to move to Linux or buy a Chromebook? Hint: yes. Give us a call 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
One thing, excuse me, hairball. One thing I want to do is with one of my Raspberry Pis is try other software packages and see if I can start using, because there's a lot of programs out there that will work on the Raspberry Pi.
Sure.
And like I said, I don't use a lot other than my banking, you know, and then surfing the web. I mean, that's about it. And my one, I've got that on a Windows 7 machine for the banking because that doesn't even go out on the internet. There's no reason to. And I have it automatically backing up now. I love it. I took the time. I got that backing up to three different places because I, you know, built both the Raspberry Pi workstation and I did a server. And I'll tell you, with those SSD drives, that is everything runs faster. Tell it to go out to the Pi... Because it's not like it's eating up a lot of Windows resources and everything else. It's just running on Twister, which is a Windows-based, and handing the files on an SSD drive. It's fast. I couldn't believe, because I did a cross-comparison. I've got the program on a Windows 10 machine, and I started it up. And I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting, because I had to go out and get the database. Versus putting it out on... the Raspberry Pi on an SSD drive, I just click on it, boom. Within, I'd say, 7 to 8 seconds, it's up and it's ready to go.
Yep.
And the other one is...
I have to correct you on one thing so we don't put out bad information. Twister OS is actually a Linux-based distribution.
Yes.
Emulates Windows.
Yes, thank you for correcting me on that one. But yes, and... You know, I'm loving it so far. I just got to, again, as you well know, finding the time to do things, it seems like there's not enough hours in the day to try other software because all of a sudden I get one going and all of a sudden they come up with an update. So I got to go through and update this stuff. But I want to try some others because it's already got LibreOffice built into it.
Right.
So I'm good there. There's just a few other programs I want to try out with it. And it's like, yeah, well, then I can just... wipe this, Windows machine and say, forget that.
So if you are going to try a Raspberry Pi, you want a minimum of 4 gig, and you want at least a 4, if not a 400. And you'll find that the 400 with 4 gig is more than enough to replace the average desktop. I've got a 4 plus with 4B plus, whatever the number is,
yeah,
with 8 gig, and it's
the 8 gig is the 8 gig now is not much more. You know, if you get the whole package.
Right, right.
I mean,
right,
you can get folks for, like Nick was saying, a little over $100. You can get the Raspberry Pi 4. It comes with an SSD drive, micro SSD hard drive, card. I recommend using an SSD hard drive because it's even faster. And, but it comes with the case, the fans and everything else, the power switch. It's a whole bundle. You can put it together, and in an afternoon, have it up and running, and boom. Like I've said before over the weeks, I replaced an old 17-year-old server with this thing that's not much bigger than a bar of soap.
Right.
And it's running a heck of a lot faster than my old server.
The Raspberry Pi, I usually get my stuff from a company called Canakit, C-A-N-A-K-I-T.
Yeah, they do the best.
And they've got an 8-gig... starter max kit.
I wonder if that'll be on Prime Day. Those will be on
Prime
because
Day's coming up. Yeah,
yeah. The 21st and 22nd is Prime Day.
It's more than a day now.
Yeah, it's a couple days.
Yeah,
but that the 8 gig one is only $135. The 4 gig one is only $115.
So for
you
the
still, for now with that, you still have to add a monitor, a keyboard, and a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the 400. That comes with the keyboard and the mouse. So all you really need is the monitor. So, you know, you pretty much get everything else you need.
And you need your TV as a monitor.
Mouse. Yeah. Anything that does HDMI. And even in the Raspberry Pi 400 comes even with... the cable that you need, so it's pretty, you know.
Yeah,
it's all nice. There.
Yep,
and it's $100. And if you want to, you can add an SSD. You can get a 500 gig SSD for only $85. So,
yeah,
there's a lot there, and it's a pretty neat thing. All right,
I mean to have a full computer for that price.
Yeah, it is a full computer. It's not. It looks like a toy, but it's a full blown real computer. All right. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I'm on Bluetooth in the car, and I wanted to make sure.
Oh, yeah, okay, clear. You're good.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering if you had an opinion on the Microsoft announcement that's coming up.
Which Microsoft announcement?
Yeah, which one?
It's coming up on the 24th about
Microsoft Build.
They're saying it's a new build, but there's a big rumor that they're going to do a different operating system and
Windows 11.
There've been leaks about Windows 11. Yeah.
We usually don't talk much about rumors because they're all over the board.
And every rumor is probably true because they're working on 100 things in the lab.
Right. But we do know two things. For the last year and a half, Microsoft has been telling their investors that they want to go to a cloud-based version of Windows. As to whether or not Windows 11 is it, we don't know. But they don't lie to their investors. Those are the only people they never lie to. So they know they've been working on that. They have also, we have seen leaks about Windows 11, and mostly what we've seen is a new front end, a new look, but not much change on the back end.
Supposedly it's still 10 in the back end.
Right.
And that they're definitely not going to call it 11. I guess they're going to go to what they usually do, copy everybody else, and I guess they're going to copy Apple.
Some people have shown screenshots where it says Windows 11, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but anybody could hack that and do that and make it look that way. But I guess they're going to go with a name, an actual Skyview or something like that, kind of how, you know, Mac does it.
Right.
Well, they've had internal code names that have never really made it. Remember Longhorn?
Yep. They've had internal code names since Windows 3. But we don't, you know, right now, it's speculation. I suspect that whatever they're going to do is going to be incremental. You know, it's not going to be revolutionary at all. But I suspect that what they'll do is something cosmetic. So it looks a little different. But not radically different, because they learned that with Vista.
I think you're going to get your wish about the line tiles going away.
Yeah, that's been a bone of contention since day one.
Yeah. And it looks like they're going to center the icons on the taskbar like Mac does it.
Mac and Chromebook and Linux and everybody else on the planet.
Like I said, they're always copying something, but I guarantee there's not going to be a number of them. I guarantee it.
Right. Well, maybe. We'll see. Yeah. Listen, we got to take a break. Thanks.
Thank you. Yep.
All right. That music tells us we're done for the first hour, but don't go away. There's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Coming your way, we're going to have Dave Enright. We're going to have Steve Ray. We're even going to have me, Nick Francesco. And we absolutely are going to have you. So don't forget that you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. If you get a busy signal, hang up and call back. Getting some calls through sometimes. But we're here and we'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we have a big announcement, Steve.
We are now live on Twitch. Twitch.tv/soundbitesradio. I found some software for our OBS studio that lets me broadcast to multiple sources simultaneously.
So now
and doesn't cost a fortune.
It doesn't cost a fortune. So now we're on Facebook.
Yep. And YouTube and Twitch.
Very cool.
And on Jazz's own station.
And Jazz's own station, but as well as the audio stream. It's hard not to hear us now. It's hard not to. So I want to point out, Steve is doing all this just on his Mac. Very nice.
Yep.
Very exciting. He's found all the plugins, added them all up, knows how to run OBS Studio, and is doing a great job. So... well done, Steve.
And we are blessed by the bandwidth here at the school because I'm sending out 3 streams.
Yeah.
There are some commercial services where you send them 1 stream and then they disperse it to everyone else. That's like $20 a month.
Yeah, we don't need that.
We don't need that.
We're right. Nonprofit.
Yeah.
And we did pick up somebody, so we've got 2 people listening, watching on Twitch, me and somebody else.
Nice.
We want to acknowledge that Steve is doing an amazing job with that stuff. And we want to acknowledge that you can give us a call. 585-966-CHAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Snapchat has begun removing its speed filter feature after it was blamed for encouraging dangerous speeding. In a statement, a
really?
Yeah. The basic idea is that you take snaps, you snap yourself, Snapchat, I don't know what the verb is, film yourself going fast. What happens is it uses GPS coordinates to say how fast you're going, shows it in the corner, so you're driving at like 100 miles an hour, filming yourself. Yeah, right. In a statement, a Snap spokesrobot confirmed the company was eliminating the feature, saying the sticker was hardly used anymore by the app's 500 million monthly active users. Nothing is more important than the safety of our Snapchat community, and we had previously disabled the filter at driving speeds, the spokesrobot said. Today, the sticker is barely used by Snapchatters, and in light of that, we are removing it altogether. They began removing the feature starting this week, but it'll be a couple more weeks before it disappears entirely from the app. Snapchat first introduced the controversial feature in 2013, but modified some of its aspects after the backlash and lawsuits. Whoever thought this was a good idea?
Yeah, idiot. Really? What idiot?
They changed it from a filter to a less prominent sticker and added a don't snap and drive warning while the feature was in use. It also limited the top driving speed at which a snap could be shared to 35 miles per hour. The feature's removal came a month after an appeals court ruled that the company can be sued over the speed filter's role in contributing to a crash that killed three young men in Wisconsin in 2017. The parents of the two of the crash victims sued Snap in 2019, alleging that the app's speed filter encouraged their sons to drive at dangerous speeds and caused their deaths through its negligent design.
You think?
Jason Davis, 17, was driving a car on a road in southern Wisconsin on May 28th of 2017, accompanied by two passengers, Hunter Morby, 17, and Landon Brown, 20. At some point during the drive, Brown opened his Snapchat app to show the car's speed filter. One snap captured the car's speed at 123 miles per hour, which was significantly above the speed limit.
Yes.
They were motivated to remind me to tell you my story at 125 miles an hour. They were motivated to drive at excess speeds in order to obtain recognition and to share their speed through Snapchat, the lawsuit claimed. The car then ran off the road, crashed into a tree, and burst into flames, killing all three. The lawsuit also cited other examples where Snap's speed filter was linked to fatal or near-fatal car crashes. In 2016, a man in Georgia suffered brain damage after a teen who was allegedly using Snapchat's speed filter while driving smashed into his car at 107 miles an hour. In 2015, three young women in Pennsylvania died after they crashed into a parked tractor trailer. Hard to see and to miss those.
Yeah. While and they don't move too well.
Right. While allegedly using Snapchat speed filter. And in 2016, the feature was tied to the deaths of five people in a Florida crash. Last year, a California judge dismissed the lawsuit, citing the Communications Decency Act, which immunizes websites and tech companies from legal liability for user-generated content. But last month, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit reversed the decision, saying that Snap was not immune from the lawsuit's claims. So should Snapchat be held accountable for those deaths? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
I mean, we've got enough crazy drivers out there now doing stupid stuff. My job now is literally out there on the road. I'm out there 10 hours a day on the road. And the idiots that I see out there running red lights or you got oncoming traffic and they see the light turn and they'll pull right in front of you to make, a left-hand turn. And I have seen so many close calls or folks not paying attention because they got their face down in the phone, come right through a red light.
Yep. Yep.
Not even a clue that it was red. Because they're so busy on their phone, that's far more important than watching what's
their
going.
Life.
Yeah. And other people's lives. They right. could be responsible for killing other people.
Right. Right.
I've got a couple of apps like that that I've used on planes and trains. It really surprised me. I was on a commuter rail in the Washington to Baltimore area, and we were stopping like every couple of minutes, and that train still got up to 125 miles an hour between stops.
Yep.
So super fast to super slow. So in 2 minutes, it went up and down that fast.
Yep. I was...
I asked the conductor, we're really doing 125 miles an hour?
Yeah. And he probably said, oh, is that all?
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Going that slow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will admit that when I was in my very early 20s, I did a spring break thing with some friends. And we took a... We rented a Dodge Dart. I remember. Ooh. And we were driving on Alligator Alley, whatever that route number is. It goes up and down the Florida...
A1A?
Probably. And we were... There was nobody on the road. I mean, there was nobody on the road. I was doing 125 miles an hour. Suddenly, you know, I see the bubble gum in the rearview mirror and the sirens and the
Interstate light. 75.
And, yeah, okay, yeah. 75. And he comes up on me and I thought, okay, he got me. I was doing 125 miles an hour. He blew past me like I was standing still and just kept on going. I hope it wasn't a disaster or an accident.
Probably. He was going on a call.
Yeah, but, yeah, at which point I slowed down to a mere 75 after that. But
I heard a good one this week where a guy gets pulled over by the police, and you know, the routine example is I was just trying to keep up with traffic.
Right.
And the cop said, well, there's nobody in front of you. And the guy said, yeah, you see how far behind I am?
Yeah. Yeah. So at any rate, we started to talk at one point about the Wegmans breach. You need to change your passwords. If you have a Wegmans card or you've bought anything at Wegmans or, you know, whatever, get out there and make sure that check your accounts first. Check them every single day, particularly the one that you use at Wegmans, to see that there haven't been any weird charges against it. And then make sure that everywhere, that first you change any password you use at Wegmans. And secondly, if you use those passwords somewhere else as well, and of course you know you should not have, change those as well and change them to something different than what you change the Wegmans password to. Never reuse a password. Not ever. That's the beauty of a thing like
NPass,
because it can show you what you are using. Not only... Oh, I shut it down. Okay. It can show you not only what your what password you're using, save them, remind you of them. You can put notes in and all those things. But it can also show you duplicate passwords, weak passwords, so you can clean up your password act just by using a product like EnPass, ENPASS.
Fantastic! I love that program.
It's a great program.
I mean, it puts passwords in. There's no way, and you know, God's green acres, that I would ever remember all the passwords that I have and the complication, you know, because most of them are anywhere from 50 to 60 characters long. And it's a mixture. And no two are alike. And like you said, it sits there and tells you, well, you know, these are kind of weak. And they suggest that you go over and check them. Yeah, well, I'm doing it. I spent one day just going through and, all right, yeah, we'll change that one, put it in. Because I don't have to worry about keeping it, you know, track of it. It's very simple. Just one major password to log into the account, and then you're there.
Yep.
And it will keep track of all your other passwords, accounts, emails, whether it's bank accounts and everything else. Yeah, that was one thing. It's still bugging me about my bank that they only limit me to 32 characters.
Yeah, that makes me angry when I create a great 80-character password.
Yeah.
And then it says, I'm sorry, you're limited to 40 characters.
I had one that at 62 characters. Is that, sorry, that's too big.
Yeah.
What? You're a bank. Hello?
I've run into that using too many of the wrong special symbols. You're only allowed 5 or 6 special symbols, and I'm trying to use, you know, something else.
Right. Right. Yeah, you got to be aware. And look.
I want to use the full 8-bit character set, darn it.
Exactly right. And I want to use UTF-8, frankly.
Yeah.
You can also, the nice thing about EnPass or any of these password managers is that you can give that master password to your significant other. Let's be serious for a minute. God forbid, but someday something might happen to you. And how is your significant other going to get into your banking and et cetera, et cetera?
Any of your other accounts.
Right. If you've got all of those in NPass,
yep,
and your significant other or your insignificant, I mean, I'm judging. So I'm not going to judge. So
somebody of importance
somebody,
in your
right,
life.
Somebody, your lawyer, you know, seal it in an envelope, write your name across the back, give it to your lawyer. If you have some sort of issue where you can no longer maintain your systems, they can get into them using NPass and deal with it. And that's a thing that you absolutely need to do. When I was at RIT, we had the master passwords. And at that point, one of the things we did was there was no NPass, there was none of that stuff back then. We wrote them on a card, put them in an envelope, sealed the envelope, wrote our names on the back, and then gave it to the dean's secretary, who then put it in a safe somewhere. And then if there was an issue with us, they could get those passwords. If whenever we changed them, we gave them a new envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have to be aware that, you know, none of us are immortal. Well, none of you are immortal. And so you need to be aware that at some point this is going to be a necessity. So use a program like NPass. Keep all of your stuff up to date in it so that someone in the future will be able to manage your accounts, deal with your banking, and et cetera, et cetera. And that's, you know, it's up to you who you trust. I don't know, and I don't care, quite frankly.
One other thing that we should point out, though, Nick, is even if you're using, say, like a product like NPass, and you set up your Wegmans password with NPass, you can don't get so complacent that, well, I created this 32-character or 40-character password, so that should be safe. I don't have to worry about that. Yes, you do, because they stole the file, and in there is that 40-character or whatever length password. Go back into NPass, have it generate another password, and change that one for that account, because they have it.
Wegmans is saying it was salted and hashed, so that's pretty good. At least they were that.
Right.
Yeah. So your plain text passwords were not visible.
Right. But if they know the salt.
Yeah.
And they guess the hash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, MD5. How good is the salt?
It's just easier just to go in and, you know,
just change it
for the few minutes that it takes.
Right.
Go in there and change it. If you're using a product like NPass, it's very simple. You go in there, say generate. You right-click on it, say copy, go over to the program, and put in the new password.
Right.
Not that hard, folks.
It's not rocket surgery.
Yeah, and it'll save it for you, and now you're protected.
And in addition, with a product like NPass, you can say, I want to save it out on the web somewhere. I save mine in Gmail. It is encrypted before it goes there. But I can use that exact same file on my desktop, my laptop, my Chromebooks, my phone, my tablets. So everywhere I have all the same up-to-date phone numbers. If I change it in one place, it's changed everywhere automatically.
Yeah, I save it to OneDrive.
I just tried to change my Wegmans password, and it won't let me use my generated password.
Too long.
It doesn't say why. It just says it's invalid. Or no, unacceptable.
Sound like
your name. Unacceptable.
So I'm trying.
Maybe they just meant you.
Minimum of 8 characters. Yeah, it's about 30.
Okay, Troy.
Must include one letter, one number. Yeah. May include symbols.
Just a minute, sir.
But I don't know what it doesn't like, because it won't tell me what it doesn't like.
That's just bad programming.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Troy from East Rochester, New York. How are things in East Rochester?
Pretty peachy there, Nick.
There you go.
I got a question. Father's Day is coming up. I have a dilemma. I know the Roku are trying to figure out whether to get, for my dad on Father's Day, a Roku stick or Amazon Prime. Would you be able to describe the differences between them, and what one would your guys' advice be? And I guess I'll take the call off the air.
Okay.
Off the phone.
So the choices are a Roku stick or the Amazon Fire Stick.
That's what he said.
Either of those is fine.
Yeah.
It really depends on, okay, it first depends on whether or not you have or your father has Amazon Prime.
And
you get more stuff.
Right. Or other Amazon devices, the right. smart speakers and things like that.
Right. If you have the Amazon Echo.
Wait a minute.
Echo,
we got to back up for a second. If he's going to watch this on a TV, he's got to make sure that the TV can get to. That it's got built in, you know,
HDMI.
HDMI,
right.
That he can get into. You know how a lot of them have it built into the feature that you could already comes with Amazon Prime or, you know, all these features that you just got to activate them.
Right. So, and that, right, Troy, the first thing is check your father's TV. If it's a smart TV,
yeah, that's what
may,
I was looking
he may
for
already have access to either probably Roku. Probably. If he's not on, a smart TV, then your choices then become either an Amazon Fire Stick or a Roku Stick, and either of those is good. But it depends. What you want to do is take a look at the various features, the things that you can get.
Yeah,
pretty
the,
much they're
the
on a par.
The streaming services. Virtually everyone has Netflix and Hulu. I don't know if Roku has Amazon Prime. Roku has traditionally had more, for lack of a better word, channels available than Amazon.
Right.
Roku's also has a 4K option, and I don't believe Amazon does yet.
No, I don't think it does.
The Roku, my TV, you know, had it built in, and the Roku had, you know, you can add those features to the menu.
And yeah, some of the smart TVs are getting smarter to be able to add new services.
Yeah, you,
right.
And that was, but I didn't have to add that one because I have Amazon Prime, and that was already added. It was already there on the list with Sling, Hulu, and the others, a number of the others.
Right. But what you want to do, the easiest thing to do for you is to check out Roku.com. And look at the channel store. That will tell you all the things you can buy. And then look at Amazon and see what the Fire Stick will let you buy. And both of those together will give you an idea of what you can add to the television.
Yeah. So it's not just the stick or the box anymore. It's what services you want after that.
Right. So, for example, my father-in-law had a gigantic television set. That had, it was a smart TV, so it had Roku on it. But you couldn't add anything that wasn't there already.
Yeah.
So we got, in our case, we got a Google TV for it. But still, any of either of the devices would have worked just as well. So the real question comes down to go to the two stores and see what they have to offer. And then pick the one that gives you the features you want at a price you're willing to pay.
Yeah, the best bang for the buck.
If you want to make it more confusing, you can add a Google Chromecast to your search.
Right.
I'm posting a link from PC Magazine where they compare Amazon Roku and Google. The one that often isn't compared is the Apple TV, kind of because it costs a lot more than the rest of them, but it's the only place you can get Apple services. So if you already have a lot of Apple stuff, then that's probably the best one to get. If you already have a lot of Amazon stuff, then that's the prep. And,
right.
And if you have Android, Google stuff, that's probably the best one to get.
Right.
But they all work with everything to make it extra confusing.
And also pay attention to what your father likes.
Yeah.
You know, if he's a big Marvel fan, then of course you're going to want HBO Max. Or not, yeah. If no, you're going to want Disney Plus. If he's a big old movie fan, you're going to want HBO Max. If you're, you know, if he's into nature documentaries, you're going to want the History Channel.
Or Discovery.
So, you know what he wants. Find the stuff that gives what he wants. Then find the device that runs the stuff that gets what he wants. Suddenly, this quick question of which do I get becomes hours of research. I do understand that, and I sympathize.
You got to do your homework.
But we all went through it.
Yeah. Oh, Dolores said that she tried, Steve, to change the Wegmans password, and evidently it doesn't like the dots.
She put a dot in?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a list of acceptable symbols, but I didn't use a symbol that wasn't on their list.
So it's either too long.
It says 8 characters, minimum of 8 characters. It doesn't say there's a maximum.
Right, but I'm sure there is.
Yeah, one letter and one number. I used an uppercase and a lowercase just because that's good. I'm trying to use an exclamation point or a dollar sign, which actually those are the most common symbols to use, so you probably shouldn't use those, but they're both permitted. So it's myaccount.wegmans.com is where you change that. In fact, I should post that too.
Yeah, you should. But who knows? Maybe somebody who works at Wegmans will call us and tell us what the actual parameters are.
Yeah, it'd be nice to know that.
That would be nice. But you do want to change your password, and you want to do it today. In fact, now would be a very good time to do that, because we're going to... is the music playing? Oh, I did not hear it. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites. Member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Happy Juneteenth, everybody. And also, I would like to wish a very happy birthday to Moses Harry Horowitz. Horowitz? No O, no second O. Moses Harry Horowitz. Better known professionally as Mo Howard of the Three Stooges. It's his birthday today. So happy birthday, Mo.
And Father's Day is tomorrow.
Yeah. And we had a, and it is not too late to get something really cool for your father. We had a text message.
Yep. We had one come in and it says, what if a hacker hacks into EnPass? Won't have the access to all your accounts, user IDs, and passwords?
Yes, they would. However,
And the same is true with whatever you have on your computer, whatever password manager you're using. First, they have to. Go ahead.
No, sorry. But here's the thing with that: your data is all in a file that is encrypted with AES 256, which is about the best encryption you're going to get. And it keys off your password. So if you have a crappy password like password or 12345, then yes, it's probably not going to be difficult for somebody to figure out your password, brute force it, and get in.
Yeah.
But if you use a decent password, the likelihood that someone will be able to crack your password is billions to one. It will take many, 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 many decades, if not centuries, to break that encryption. So if you're actually worried about someone breaking into your password database a couple of hundred years from now, then don't use
that. But they got to first break into your computer.
Well, no, they could steal it from whatever thing you put it on. So in your case, if somebody actually broke into Microsoft's, admittedly getting into any one of those is difficult, but if somebody did, they would have your database.
Yep.
Okay, they've now got a giant file of gobbledygook, unless they know what encryption method was used, not just AES 256, but beyond that, and what your password is. So the likelihood of them being able to brute force your password in any reasonable amount of time, and we're measuring that in at least decades, if not centuries.
Yeah.
Assuming your password is a good one.
And you got to be a pretty important person for them to put that time and effort.
Well, that's just exactly it. You know, if they're going to look at this thing and say, Dave, who?
Yeah. Or if they were going after, Bill Gates?
Right. That one they're going to go after, but they're going to go Dave who?
Yeah.
And you're done. It's not going to be a problem. Not when it takes that much effort.
Yeah.
If it was plain text, absolutely. They'll just dig in and see what they can get.
Yep. But they want the best bang for their
targets,
buck.
Right. There are easier targets than an NPAS database.
Hollywood stars or movie stars, you know, right. or singers or whatever. Entertainment. People of importance and company heads.
Although if you get enough of the non-important people, there's a lot of money behind it all.
Well, yes, exactly yeah. right. But for the amount of effort they have to put in to break that encryption, rather they look than
for
using
the,
their...
They'll look for the easier target anyway.
That's exactly
Yeah, they right. just have to turn to mine. They'd sit there and say, sorry, you owe this guy money.
That's right.
Before you can get it.
Well, and we did mention off the air, browsers, Google Chrome and Mozilla Firefox, also have password managers built into the browser. On the Mac, the password manager is built into the OS level, not the browser, so it's right. it's a little tougher. But if someone breaks into your Google account, they have all of the passwords you've saved at Google because they're all saved under your one Google password.
Right. So it makes sure your Google password is
again,
difficult.
You can generate and that take, one out of NPAS.
And one of the because there was a case of this recently, someone had forgotten that Yahoo was their backup email address for Google. So I, you know, the bad guy went to Google, said, "Forgot my password," and said, "Okay, we'll email it to Yahoo." And okay, and then they go to Yahoo, forgot my password, and they're able to use these forgot my password links to break into the service. Not and it doesn't have to be the service they're targeting. It can be one of these, you know, backup password services. So back in the early days, you know, when Google first started, we all had other email addresses. So go in and check what your recovery password is, or your recovery address, your backup address, mm-hmm. something like that. And you may want to set it or add a second recovery address to a spouse or a trusted friend. We have a lot of people come into the shop who forgot their password, and the only thing they can do is email another email address that they don't have anymore.
Right.
So when you change your email address, change your recovery password.
Get an email address that you're not going to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, Gmail or Outlook or Hotmail. Or
it's typically your ISP address.
And that's the thing, folks. Well, you know, I mean, we used to have...
And that's the one to get rid of because that's typically what you started with. Right. And then when you change ISPs, you often lose that address.
Right. Well, I'm sure you've gotten it too, Steve. When they people come in and, well, I forgot my password. Can't you get it?
Nope.
Nope.
Yeah.
Maybe.
How would I get it?
Right.
I can show you the forgot my password link, and when it asks, you know, who's your best friend in high school, I don't know. Well, what did you tell it when you set up that question?
Oh.
I don't know. Okay, then I can't get in.
And, of course, that's the beauty of a product like NPAS,
mm-hmm.
because there's a notes field, and you can put in the security question and the answer.
You can add other fields.
Particularly me, because I lie. I lie like a dog.
I lie like
forms.
A rug. You know,
absolutely. Who was your best friend in high school? Purple.
Mm-hmm.
What was your home address? What was your street as a child? What?
Yeah, street you grew up on.
Yeah, what was the street you grew up on?
Apple.
Linux. Apple. Right. Lie. Mm-hmm. Lie. But, and lie differently on every form.
Oh, yeah.
But make sure you know your lie.
And again, in NPAS, they let you put in other fields. So you can type in question one, question two, and put your answers in that note field.
Yeah.
So it keeps track of it. It's not hard. The only thing that's hard about it, probably for a lot of folks, is just finding the time.
Remembering to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's you and Sponsor Block.
Yep.
Stop complaining about it and take 4 minutes.
Oh, I know. Hey, I admit I'm my own worst enemy. It's just I got so many projects like you.
Yeah.
You know, things going. It's like I'm trying to tackle so many different things, and it's like, again, not enough hours in a day sometimes. I figure days should be, you know, 30 hours long.
Sure. Exactly. That would do it.
Mm-hmm. And then I'd fill them up.
Right. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Although, of course, it's a beautiful day out there.
Yeah.
And so people are out rocking in the hammock.
8 degrees out there right now. And I guess tomorrow's supposed to be, again, another nice day for Father's Day. And I hope all our listeners, the dads out there, get to enjoy some time with their families now that we are getting back to normal. And I'd like to thank all the folks out there that have taken the time to go out and get vaccinated so we can all go out there now. You know, there's so many places you can go to now. I just went out, Sandy and I just went out with three other couples to finally have dinner again.
Yep.
That's something we haven't been able to do in over a year and a half. And we wound up going up to the lake, hitting in an establishment there. And it was just great. Didn't have to worry about the mask and everything else. Sat outside with our friends and enjoyed it like we had in the past. So things are coming back to normal, and it's great. And I thank you all for doing that, though, folks.
My daughter took me to a movie for Father's Day.
Oh, there you go.
It was great. It was great. It was the first movie I've been to in a year and a half. And
they're still talking in them?
They're in color. And my daughter said... And my daughter and I both just loved it. I mean, it was, we both kept going, we're at the movies. We're at the movies.
Yeah.
You know, like we were living in the back 40 somewhere and we finally scraped the 25 cents together to go to the Nickelodeon somewhere.
Which theater did you go to? Because I've been having trouble finding a list of which ones are open again.
AMC is open. They're opening the Regal soon, if not shortly. And so they're coming along. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Hi, Brian, what's up?
Oh, doing a good time there, guys. One other thing about the passwords.
Yeah.
I check my balance online in the morning for overnight activity.
Yep.
And in the afternoon for day activity, see if anything crazy happens.
Yep.
And I spotted something this past week. It was a small amount, under $100, and a $1 transaction fee with numbers and names that I did not recognize.
Interesting.
There's that little cryptic note that you get on entry side. It says, I have no idea who these people are. So I printed out my sheet, took it right to the bank, sat down with the officer, said, I don't like these. If you want to contest them, yes. Okay, we have to cancel your card.
Yep.
We'll give you a new one, right? I know that's the procedure.
Then you got to remember all the other services you have that card tied to.
Right.
Tied to, right.
A lot of banks will allow you to put it on hold.
Yeah, yeah.
Or freeze
it. This one was about to be expired anyway.
Right.
Okay. So I said, what the heck? I may as well just do a new one.
Right.
But the first question he asked me, he said, okay, here's your name. What's your account password? I don't know. It's about 12, 15 characters long. I have no idea. And I didn't have any other way to get into Google to find my password.
Right.
He just laughed. He says, I can't remember mine either.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a bank officer. I got another way that I can do this. Don't worry about it.
Well, it's not that I can't remember it. I don't know what it is, period. Yeah.
That's right.
I hit the generate button. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
So, you know, so it's one of those little sidelines that happen, craziness.
Yeah, I check mine the same way every morning, every evening, and we have fun.
Yeah, sure.
In the daytime, in the nighttime. Okay, yes, and that is good practice, and everybody should be doing it.
Yeah. Then you wouldn't be surprised when all of a sudden you've been hacked.
Take it from Brian. Check it every day. Again, it only takes a couple of minutes.
Well, a lot of the banks, you can even do it on your cell phone now.
Right.
Yeah, don't wait till you get your statement at the end of the month.
No, no.
Because by then it's too late.
Mm-hmm. By then it's way too late, sure.
Yep.
Sure. As far as theaters you were just talking about?
Yeah.
The Little is back open.
Yes.
Nice.
So, yeah, we'll get back to sitting in the dark and pretending like we know the people around us.
Yeah, exactly. My daughter just sent
Well, thank you very much, Brian.
Yep, I'm going to get out of the way. Thanks, guys.
Have a good one.
Bye.
All right, have fun. Yeah, I guess I don't know where that is.
What's that?
So, here it is. Let's see. Pittsford Movies opens Friday. Regal Henrietta is open as well.
So we've always we live sort of near the Pittsford Cinema, and it's not as expensive as the giant chains, and they still have the recliner chairs and the pretty good popcorn. And
right,
Yeah, like I say, there are so many places now that are, I won't say fully normal, but somewhat normal. I mean, you know, it's great that, you know, even this summer, compare it to last year, when we were in total lockdown, folks, afraid to go anywhere other than the grocery store or where we essentially had to go for work, to now we're out there, you know, being able to have family picnics. Father's Day is tomorrow. A lot of families are going to be able to get together with their dads, which they haven't been able to do in a long time. So it is. It's a good time. It's supposed to be a nice day. So hope everybody gets to enjoy it.
Right. I've been using my Google, I don't know what they call it, wallet something, where you can, if you've got near field communications on your phone, you can use your, I have both PayPal and my Visa card, and I can just tap it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, that was one thing. It was about, has to be about 6-8 months ago from my bank. All of a sudden, I get another card. And I go, wait a minute. This card I've got is okay. I don't need this one. They go, no, take that one, cut it up. I said, but it's got the same number. Yes, we've modified it. So now that they've got the special chip in there, that I can go up and hit the quick pay.
Tap to pay,
Yeah, I go, oh. And I didn't even ask for it. And they sent it anyways, but it was okay, cool.
One of my cards gives me more cash back if I do tap to pay versus chip.
Nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Although the joke is, you know, you're paying 20% interest and getting 3% back means you're paying 17% interest.
Right. It's cheaper than 20.
Cheaper than 20, yeah.
Better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with this, one of the things that I like about it is that with at least one of my cards, it actually uses a temporary number.
Yeah, that's what my card does. Every transaction is a unique credit card number. So if that...
For that few minutes.
Yeah, if that transaction is breached, they don't have your real credit card number to do anything with.
Right. All they'll get is not in use or empty.
Expired,
or,
I think.
Expired, maybe, something. But they get something. So that's what I'm trying to use more and more often now.
Is the tap to pay?
The tap to pay, because with my phone, not with the card.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because you get that temporary one-time number. And it's harder for people. And also, I can do my PayPal.
For a long time, the stores were either Google Pay or Apple Pay.
Right.
And now most of them take both, and Samsung Pay and PayPal. And
it's
just the same NFC. You just flip a switch at the back end.
Yeah. See, that's where I'm getting to, where if the sites will do PayPal or Amazon, I'll deal with them. Because then I know I'm protected. Because there are so many scams in that out there right now. You think, oh, well, they got all these ads here, and oh, it's got to be legit.
Yeah, I have that problem with Ask Nick. As many of you know, you can join my newsletter, and that's $25 a year. And I send out a newsletter every week answering people's computer questions. Same shtick I've been doing for 35 years.
I went to Ask Nick, and my computer crashed.
Yeah, I don't like you.
You didn't get the memo?
The point here is that I take your payment in PayPal, and there are some people who refuse to use PayPal. Well, the reason I use PayPal is because you are protected.
Mm-hmm.
PayPal protects the user more than me. Certainly, I pay a fee to protect you, and I'm happy to do it.
Yep.
But you get protected, and I would rather have that. If there's a dispute, PayPal will resolve it. If there's an issue, PayPal will fix it.
We had to, at our store, we had to stop taking PayPal because they protect the buyer more than the seller.
Yep.
We had a bunch of sort of transactions in a row where we ship something off to somebody. We have a tracking number. It shows it was delivered. One of them went to a post office, and the person said they never got it and got their money back. Well, we know they got it. They're lying.
Right.
We called the post office and talked to the postmaster. Oh, yeah, they came in the other day and picked that up. They said they didn't get it and got their money back. Oh, sorry. So
right.
We lost so much merchandise that we stopped taking PayPal.
No, I get it. But I do that. Like I said, this video is unavailable. Look at that.
Yeah. I got to reboot, and we'll see if the streams will pick up where they left off.
Yeah. Anyway, while he's doing that, we'll go to the phones, and we'll talk to Thomas from Rochester, New York. Hi, Thomas. What's up?
Yes. My question is about the VLC media player.
Yeah.
Do you recommend that?
I use it every day.
Yeah.
That's a good one for playing my...
better than Microsoft.
Especially the weird formats. It can play almost anything you run into.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, because I told you I bought a new laptop, the Dell, and I don't know, does that have a video player in it?
It does. There is a Windows video player, but I much prefer VLC.
The most common format these days is MPEG-4. And so the OSs in general will play the common formats. It's when you run across some of the uncommon ones from other companies. Uh-huh. Or you're trying to play an old, run across an old real video and trying to play that. And
it's backwards compatible.
VLC played it just fine.
Yeah, because I have, when I transferred my information to the new laptop, some old things from 10 years ago that I had videos, and now they're on the new one. But the VLC will play everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Backwards compatible.
And so I'll just download that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you can get it from the Microsoft Store, I think.
Microsoft Store.
But you can get it directly at videoland.org as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, either one.
What is it, videoland.org?
Yep. Yeah, videolan.org.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah, I think it's in Microsoft Store.
Or you can do a Google search
so
for
you know it's... a legitimate download.
Right. And of course, it is from videoland.org as well. But the Microsoft Store has lots and lots of software in it. And I'm pretty sure VLC is in there.
Yeah. That's been one of the common sort of rebuttals in the Epic lawsuit between Apple and Epic. You know, why shouldn't Apple offer third-party sideloading? And, well, the answer is because when Epic tried that on Google...
Right.
On Android, within hours of Fortnite being released on Android, there were hundreds of fake Fortnites complete with instructions on how to sideload it because Epic didn't want to pay Google either.
Right.
And they eventually caved and went on the Google Play Store and gave Google 20% or 30%.
30%? Yeah. Sideloading is not terribly difficult. And
explain that.
Sideloading is instead of getting something from the store... the Apple Store, the Android Store, the Microsoft Store, you just go and download it from somewhere and install it. There are some problems with that. One is, where is that somewhere?
Yeah.
You know, is that a legit source or not?
Are you checking the website that it has the S, that it's secure?
Right. Yeah. And is it a legit website on top of that? So it is much safer on pretty much every operating system to, you know, Linux has a store. Everybody's got a store. Chrome has a store. It is much safer to load through the store than it is to sideload, to load from outside the store. But, you know, not everything is readily available or hard to find. I had something on one of my old phones that I wanted to put on the new phone, and it took me an hour of searching to find it. It was still in the store, but you couldn't search it by name. I ran across it completely accidentally.
On the iOS store, there's an option that says not on this device, but there's so many things that I've downloaded over the years that doesn't help very much either.
Right.
It's like, oh, that sounds neat, download. Oh, that sounds neat, download. And then, and actually, that's a big problem, too, because then your device fills up with crap. You don't know what permissions you gave it. And so the newer OSs are starting to now ask, this app is using your camera and your microphone or your GPS or your Bluetooth. Do you still want it to do that?
Right.
And what does Facebook need my Bluetooth for?
Yeah.
So they can track you.
They just want it. That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, I don't think so anymore.
Yeah, right. you should. That's the other thing you should do. Every once in a while, go through your devices and get rid of stuff you don't use. Again, most of the newer operating systems will tell you haven't used this app in a year.
Yeah.
Maybe you would want to uninstall it. But do go through that list by hand. If there's a thing in there, yeah, you'll rediscover some gems that you might enjoy, but you'll also be able to just delete
clean up
stuff
your phone.
People are always complaining that they don't have enough space in their phones. Well, get rid of this cruft, the stuff you don't need anymore. It's easy enough to do. You just uninstall and it works. And you save yourself some space and you save yourself some time. And life is just better all the way around. All right, that music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray, who managed to get 4 or 5 audio video streams up before it crashed. And we thank him for that. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, and we're right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. Make sure you vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And we will be back to see you next week with a whole lot more Soundbites. We will see you, in fact, in just 166 hours. So be good to one another, will you? Back up. Clean up your machine. See you next week.